Well, y'all, the lawsuits keep piling up. FTC is suing Zillow and Redfin over a $100 million rental syndication deal. Zillow and CoStar are duking it out over copyright infringement and listing photos. NAR's president, Kevin Sears, is trying to reframe the national real estate conversation. And Rocket just finalized a $14.2 billion acquisition of Mr. Cooper Group, making it the largest mortgage lender and servicer in the country. And tucked in the background, MLS pinned one final approval of its settlement in the Nosalek case. All that and special guest, Vanessa Bergmark, CEO of Red Oak Realty, and a tiny little AI tool I love to love called House Canary. Welcome back to The Clean Close. I'm Courtney Polis. This week has been another roller coaster week in real estate news and headlines. The first story we're going to get to is the FTC suing Zillow and Redfin over a $100 million syndication deal. So the FTC filed suit, and they're calling it an end run around competition. So the government is arguing that the deal consolidates rental data and ad power, squeezing smaller competitors and limiting consumer choice. Okay, here's a quote from Daniel Guarnerera, the director of the FTC's Bureau of Competition. He says, quote, paying off a competitor to stop competing against you is a violation of federal antitrust laws. Zillow paid millions of dollars to eliminate Redfin as an independent competitor in an already concentrated advertising market, one that's critical for renters, property managers, and the health of the overall U.S. housing market. Zillow's response was, quote, our listing syndication with Redfin benefits both renters and property managers and has expanded renters' access to multifamily listings across multiple platforms. It is pro-competitive and pro-consumer by connecting property managers to more high-intent renters so they can fill their vacancies and more renters can get home. We remain confident in this partnership and the enhanced value it has delivered and will continue to deliver to consumers. So what does this all really mean? I don't know if you've been renting an apartment lately, but Zillow's platform for rentals is actually kind of great. It's where a lot of landlords who can't afford to pay commissions or don't want to pay real estate commissions end up listing their properties. Renters can apply through the platform to multiple different landlords without paying a lot of different fees and application fees. It does the credit check for you. I've used it myself. I actually kind of love it. I don't remember Redfin ever actually having any kind of platform to compete with Zillow's property management platform. So I'm not exactly sure why this is, again, coming up, the ad power thing. Look, the bottom line is buyers and renters all should have choices about what different platforms they want to use to get their information, right? I mean, right? Although in the past in our industry, we had the MLS as the singular platform for real estate agents to access that information. As things become democratized, you would hope that maybe it would keep it competitive so that if a property manager wanted to list on a big rental portal, they would have some choices. Maybe it would keep the prices down for them. I don't know. But it seems odd to me that this is the thing that is coming up right now. And also Zillow and Redfin, who are traditionally competitors, at least in the residential resale space, would make such a big syndication deal. I wish the FTC would get more involved in the Compass Anywhere thing or Zillow Compass lawsuits, because to me, it's like, you know, Zillow's platform is great. Renters and landlords should have choices, but does it really improve anything or make things worse to have these two platforms working together? I don't know that it's any different than any other acquisition or deal. I would love your thoughts on that. Maybe I'm missing it. Maybe I'm missing the impact, but that's how it feels to me. It's kind of like a big, who cares? That's how I feel. Hey guys, if you're picking up what I'm laying down, please like, comment, and subscribe. Share with your friends. Post something in the comments to tell me what it is that's interesting to you in this melee that is our real estate industry right now. I'm excited to bring you new episodes every single Friday. Now, let's get back to the show. Moving on. I found this one really interesting. Kevin Sears, the NAR president, made a statement in Inman, published it like an op-ed, and he is issuing a call to our profession. Quote, as realtors, it's critical to remember who we serve. a pointed reminder given the lawsuits and settlements circling commissions and transparency, but something that's not lost on us. All of us actual realtors can never forget who we serve because that's how we make our money. In fact, a majority of our marketing spend is on connecting with people who we would like to serve, right? And our business is built on happy clients, shared victories, and ultimately a positive client experience. We've never lost sight of that. He really should be writing this to a different industry because honestly, the thing he's trying to do here is say that it's somehow on us to remember in light of all of these lawsuits and all of these disputes that we need to focus on the consumer. Where's the focus on the consumer when you allowed Zillow to use our listings on their platform without requiring them to put our listing information and allowing them to grow so large that they're actually, you know, dominating the search platforms? Where were you then? Were you looking out for us? Were you looking out for the consumer? I feel like NAR, as always, is missing the mark. Missing the mark because for realtors and members of this association, we have never lost sight of what it's about. The actual wars are happening beyond our control. They're data wars, they're portal wars, of which NAR actually has quite a bit of influence. NAR has so much influence over the MLSs and how we are able to share our information. If I were to turn the tables on Kevin Sears, I would say maybe you need to direct that inward and remember who you serve, NAR. You serve your members. We serve the consumer. You serve us. And if you're not serving us, then I would ask you, who have you been serving all these past couple of years? Why are we in this situation? Why are we in these lawsuits? And why did you not have so many of our backs in these lawsuits? Now, I'm lucky that I was not one of the named brokerages in the Sitzer Burnett case because I'm too small to be important in that. But I know that there was a lot of talk at the time when those lawsuits were going down about how unsupported a lot of the brokerages that were named felt by our association. So maybe, Kevin, if I may, respectfully suggest that you remember who you serve, because for us realtors, we've never forgotten on which side our bread is buttered. I'm excited to discuss all of these news headlines with Vanessa Bergmark, the powerhouse CEO of Red Oak Realty. Welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you. Nice to see everyone.
Yes. Did you see Kevin Sears' Inman article?
I heard the catchphrase. I didn't read through the whole thing yet, so I can't speak about all of it. But I imagine you're talking about their brand awareness campaign for.
Well, let me give you some quotes to marinate on. Okay, yeah. So he says, our industry represents 1/5 of U.S. GDP. It drives economic growth and enables millions of Americans to build intergenerational wealth. However, too many in the industry think they are the economic engine and wealth creator. They aren't. In actuality, the economic force behind our industry is the millions of homebuyers and sellers we represent. And then he says, the industry is not built for real estate professionals. It's built for the homebuyers and sellers. What do you think about that?
I think if that's their messaging, they should probably start walking that talk, right?
What about the idea, Vanessa, that NAR is meant to represent realtors and realtors are the ones who represent homebuyers and sellers? What do you think about them maybe remembering who they serve?
I mean, I think, you know, they always say, like, if you want to know who your customer is, just look at who's paying you, right? That's who your client is. I don't know of any homebuyer or home seller that actually paid NAR. So if we're going to just like cut to the chase, I think that yes, they should probably be talking to their clientele, which would be the realtors. And if that's not their client anymore, then that campaign is like what he said is spot on. But I don't necessarily, I think there's a bit of a disconnect there if I'm, you know, rather than being facetious about it.
I mean, so here's another thing. I mean, do you feel that NAR is under threat with the Compass Anywhere merger?
Of course. Of course. I think the industry and the homeowner is under threat with that, right? Anytime you look at mass consolidation and antitrust issues and monopolies, there's not just one person. It's not just the competitor that suffers with that, right? The one they took down or the one they acquired or the one that disappeared overnight. It's the entire industry and all the little people that make up that industry. So if it's realtors right now, first it was brokers, then it'll be the realtors. But in the end, it's always going to be left to the consumers, that final client, the one that has to take that pill or buy that house or buy that car or watch that, you know, Netflix series. It's them. That's what suffers. And I think that's what we got to remember.
I think that there's a missing piece here, which is like, you know, how strategic big companies can be in planting seeds now that bear fruit later, especially when it comes to propaganda campaigns, for example. And when I think about the impact that tech supposedly and data supposedly are having on our industry at a major level, right? Like you see all these big lawsuits are happening around online distribution of data. I remember that I do a way better CMA than any tech tool I've found. And I do a way better job of psychologically counseling my clients through big decisions than any tech tool. James Dwiggins at Reimagine was giving a presentation and he said, they're coming for you, they're coming for your job. And it's not that they're coming for your whole job. They're coming for a piece of your job that maybe consumers will think could be replaced by tech. And so when I think about NAR and remembering who we serve and the lack of messaging during this last sequence of lawsuits and the lack of support that a lot of the brokerages involved in Sitzer, Burnett and similar type cases throughout the country who were just abiding by policy that was set by NAR or local associations or state associations. And by default, the MLSs that are owned by those associations, because the MLSs have to play by the association rules most of the time, I'm like, you know, all of this mess adds up to where NAR is still trying to protect the old regime without preparing our industry, the members, for the future, for the war we are about to fight. And that's why this Compass Anywhere merger could happen right under their noses and threaten to take all the people out of NAR and make it not required anymore.
I think if we're counting on NAR, the remaining brokerages that are left, right, that are not part of this, you know, if we pivot over to the Compass Anywhere merger, I think if we're counting on NAR to get us out of this mess, we've already lost the plot, right? Because they're not. And we can't blame them entirely on putting us into this mess, because remember, NAR is also made up of us. It's like when people will be like, oh my God, did you see the administration we got? Well, you voted.
People say that. So, they say that. But Vanessa, I have an honest question to ask you. You're a vocal advocate for agents and you are the representative on many national stages for independent brokerages. This is why I effing love you. You are such a vocal person. But do you really think that voices of independent brokerages are actually heard at NAR? Did you have the experience of being heard?
Well, you know what? I can't actually say because I've never been to an NAR meeting, right? Okay. So I don't know. They're not probably hearing my voice or many, maybe some that think. I mean, there's all sides of independence, right? There's two-man shop independence. There's, you know, ones that are several thousand. So there's all different levels of it. But I think what it is I want to be careful on placing blame on, like, you know, I did not put us here. Because anytime you sit and allow something to happen in some certain way and don't speak out about it, right? Or you don't fight against it and rail against it, then there is a little bit of responsibility. It's not all on you, but there's a little bit of responsibility. So I don't even need to, like, NAR is a bit of like a waste of breath right now. There's so many things we could talk about, because this right now, this play, what they did was they thought they were helping us when they put this together. They thought they were helping the industry when they put this together around clear cooperation. No one wanted it. No one wanted it. It got voted in. Okay, whatever. It's in. Now it's gotten so like convoluted in there that now we can't undo it. So now no one wants to undo it and be left with the ramifications of what was built during that time period.
But what is undoing it? You know, it's interesting because Kevin Sears, in his op-ed, talks about the Code of Ethics. And I don't know how recently you've read the Code of Ethics, but part of my 11-week training, you've read it recently?
Yes, because you know what? Not a lot of people follow it, but you are supposed to be upheld to it if penalized. There's something there if someone wants to pursue
100%.
it.
I read it every couple of weeks when I start a new training, word for word. And there are still places in the code of ethics that have not been updated to even reflect clear cooperation. For example, there is a section that talks about how cooperation between agents is not even required if it's not in the best interest of the seller, which I found to be at odds with clear cooperation policy, and it's never been updated. So even the code of ethics, which it has a lot of great stuff in it, of course. For those of you who haven't read it, you should go read it because not only does it hold us to a lofty ideal of the American dream and our submission to the idea that we are serving a higher purpose with supporting home ownership in America, but also it establishes some professional types of interactions, how we should relate to each other, how we should go about, what's the right thing to do if somebody else's client solicits you or like whatever, rules, right? And in my op-ed in response to Refkin's op-ed comparing our industry moment to NCAA football or sports, he said like NAR, MLS, and Zillow are essentially profiting off of content that they did not create. And where I hold NAR accountable is in, we had a platform, Realtor.com, which has since been sold, that could have been a search portal that directed people immediately to the listing agent. And, code of ethics, being what it is, has all these suppositions about what's fair play and what's not, all of which were thrown out the door, by the emergence of Redfin and Zillow, but especially Zillow taking over the search portal, what previously would have been agents' access to data and kind of democratizing that, but to their own financial advantage, right? That definitely changed the landscape of how buyers search for homes and who gets first contact with buyers. And it created a lot of confusion. I'm sure you spent the first years, like I did, of Zillow advising my agents to advise their clients about what that platform really is and that person that they're contacting is not really the listing agent. You did that too, right?
Yeah. But I also first, before I saw Zillow coming, advertised on Zillow because let's just remember how we got into Zillow. It was free when it first arrived. It cut out the monopoly that the paper had on us because they were charging us an arm and a leg. And we just basically moved over to another room on the Titanic, just called a different thing. But they took as much, if not more, than what the old school newspapers were taking. I think the key discussion here is like, what happens when things get too big, right? When they get too big, again, it always eventually affects the consumer. Always.
Right.
There's
Yeah,
never a
it
time it
does.
doesn't. Because if I have to pay more as a business owner, it trickles down. Always. Always.
And we were talking about clear cooperation before, and Refkin very recently was like, I'm just saying we're not going to abide by it. We're just not going to. He just made like a public statement and said like, we're just not going to. And NAR had no response. No
Well,
response. And that's how I feel they were during the Zillow boom when it moved into becoming a It moved off of just becoming an advertising platform and got its brokerage licenses in all the different states. Like at that moment, that key moment, I was aware of it. I was talking about it. But again, who am I? Like it takes
But
an
here,
audience to make
Courtney,
a
here's where
change.
people make responses and they step up. Look what just happened with Jimmy Kimmel and Disney. That was a beautiful example of the power of the consumer. Doesn't matter if you agree with it or not. That's not the point, right? It's when somebody gets a chance to say, I am not going to spend my dollars here, I'm going to walk. If realtors just said, I'm out, you know what? If he's out, he's not paying by the rules, I'm not paying my membership fees. You know what happens? Something.
No, but
Someone gets in trouble.
this is the risk, and you bring it right back. And I'm glad, so we can wrap up on this. I say, Kevin Sears, in response to the we realtors need to remember who we serve, I think you guys need to remember who you serve because the moment NAR becomes no is optional and be has to prove its relevance to realtors, I think that its very existence is at risk. And I Even though I'm an outspoken, I feel outspoken about the challenges of getting anything done, and they're kind of bureaucratic lethargy, okay, in a very fast-paced, very quickly changing industry, I still believe in a unified purpose, and I still believe in unified, like a one place where we can establish how we interact with each other, and one place where we can share our, you know, a safe place for realtors. I still do believe in the ultimate mission of NAR. I just find it very odd that he would remind us who we serve when I feel like NAR forgot who it serves. I'll leave that one there, right there. Okay, I want to talk about something else. Unless you have a final thought on that.
No, we can move along.
Okay,
good. I mean, we can talk about it all day, but there's other interesting things that happened this week.
So many interesting things. Okay, so we haven't gotten a chance to talk about the Compass Anywhere merger. A lot of people are saying this is actually a huge opportunity for boutique brokerages or independent brokerages. Do you see ways that independent brokerages can benefit from the consolidation at this large consolidation at that level?
Well, I think we got to go back to what does consolidation mean for the people experiencing it, right? Like, I mean, we understand why when you read the tea leaves of their two public companies, you read the reports, you can get in there, you can see there's a lot of debt, there's efficiencies, they're going to be slimming it down. It makes sense from a business, you know, blueprint. But how that trickles down to the agent experience, of which they still, until this point, I mean, I've never believed that Compass is in here to keep agents around and give them the $3 trillion of commission, is going to always remain going to the agent. It would be great if the agents actually thought about how this could potentially lead to their own demise or a massive decrease in the splits or the pay. But that's another topic in and of itself. But right now, what is going to be their experience? And then what is going to be the consumer experience? Because if everyone is like, my town already was a lot of Compass. Now, if you've got anywhere, so Coldwell Banker and Corcoran and Century 21, I don't think that's here.
Sotheby's and all ERA, these,
all these brands
Better Homes
are now also feeding up to the same mothership. Well, what, it's not so much like who really cares where it goes. That part isn't. But what happens when you have that, which is the biggest, this is where the opportunity lies. I will answer the question, is you stop caring. When you get really big, you get really kind of fat and lazy. And then all that innovation that comes out of like what made them great in the beginning, that they were innovating, they were fast, they were taking words and coming up with their own lexicon of the same word, but they made it sound way more sexy. All of that creates awareness, excitement, it's creativity, it's like what it means to be human. And then all of a sudden you strip it and it all feeds up to this, and it becomes about policy and bureaucracy, and it's a snore, it's a bore. And last time I checked, agents are pirates. That's the best analogy I can give. They didn't want to work at some corporate mothership, sitting behind writing policy. They're creative. They have a skill set and a style that's not their jam. They'll figure it out at some point. I don't know when. That's not my job. Right. I just need to make sure that with my agents and my brand is that I'm living with my ability to realize, wow, someone said to me the other day, you woke up and you're one of the luckiest women I know. You still are you. You didn't get sold. And I said, that has nothing to do with luck. That has nothing to do with luck. And it's also a great reminder to me and all the other independents out there is we can craft our own future. If we want to change something, we can change it that day. We don't have to go call home to Jupiter, right?
Right, and which has always actually been, that's always been the thing. That is the freedom. That is what it is that it means,
Courtney,
to be an independent. Yeah.
That is also why we have still existed, is because you could never round us up in a net. We were so different. When you thought you caught one, the other three slipped right on out. And yep. I think what happens now is they're catching up all our great agents in one giant net, and they don't even realize it, right? It's like a trolling net. And they've got them all thinking that they've got to, what, give all their names over, that they've got to take all of it off because they're going to get incentivized by some money to take all of their listings off and make sure that they don't go to market because they've got to go here first. They need to start asking the questions they always asked in the past quickly, because they will be commoditized. And if the consumer then is the next one, they will pay more. It will change the way we do it. That agent, their goal is to get that agent out of the power play that they are in. And they are getting closer to doing that. So that's,
well,
I know those agents.
I feel like, okay, I don't know about you, but you know, there was a moment when Instagram felt all-encompassing. Everybody's like, we got to go on Instagram. We got to build our followers on Instagram. Everybody cares about how many followers we have on Instagram to get a listing. I think a lot of us are exhausted by all of the new responsibilities that we now have to have as real estate agents. Like, we have to be on TikTok and LinkedIn and social and Insta and this thing and that thing, right? And I think consumers feel the same way. We're starting to value our time at home and off our devices a lot more than even in recent past. Like, I've talked to agents about this and they're caring less. I obviously, the economics matter too. Like, we don't all have in this horrible market as much extra cash laying around to do stuff. So I think there's a piece of it that makes it, I'm happy for it, that makes it less about the virtual experience, less about the tech driven experience, and more about the human to human experience, which is, I think, always a place where independents win. I know for a fact that the experience that my clients have is curated. It's like, okay, how do you like to be communicated with? What do you need? How can I support your, you want to flip a house? How can I support you in your acquisition? Let's look at the numbers. Let's help you with design support, with getting contractors, bids, like doing the full concierge package without even having to advertise it that way. We know our clients so well, and we treat them so well throughout the process that I feel like that experience takes it off a platform, less about how we search and more about how we interact in a real in-person human way. And I do feel like that's an advantage indies have, because we can turn on
Of course. Well, you know, it's not even indies. It's anyone other than that experience. If that's like a big policy experience, like, it's gonna get old fast. But here, it's exactly like the experience you want with your doctor. Like, you could go to your generalist doctor, but once something goes seriously wrong, like, you're gonna want that person that knows what they're doing for that very specific ailment that you have. And you're gonna wanna be able to talk to them and see them. Yeah, maybe it's great if you could get all your stuff across a portal really fast, but when it comes down to, like, tell me what it is, I don't wanna read about it in a memo that comes across as a text, right? Like, yep. This is my life we're talking about here. This is my house. Anytime it gets like that, whether it's a school experience, like, any of the real, real, real important experiences, we're going to want them belly to belly. And I don't care what we're saying, but that's not changing.
One of the things, have you ever worked for an NRT or anywhere company before?
I worked for Keller Williams.
Okay. I worked for Coldwell Banker and Weikert. Both were NRT at the time in DC. And I don't know how it was for you, but I remember one of the things I felt the least organic about was the sales manager was constantly pitching us to use the in-house in-house title and escrow,
right,
and the in-house lender, and it was a nonstop pressure campaign. And you get the feeling that the office managers are there not to oversee and help and support agents with sales questions, procedural things, or how to get a deal done, and more just as ambassadors of additional profit generators for the brokerage. And I remember feeling really funny about that. Like, I remember thinking, if it's not in the best interest of my client, I'm not going to do it. And I've already heard, not with regard to Compass Anywhere, but with regard to the Zillow Flex thing, which was something we went over in my last podcast, the Zillow Flex lawsuit, that actually Zillow Flex agents are getting pressure from Zillow to refer their clients to the Zillow lender in order to get higher quality leads. And, you know, I'm sure, given this current market and the interest rates, the lead count and quality has gone down. So for a lot of people spending money on those Zillow Flex leads, like, that's really important to them. And I don't think it's in the consumer interest. So I'm already seeing this, like, conflict of interest.
Look, all we have to do as independents to keep this going is our job really well. Like, really well. Don't worry about all of it. I like to keep everyone informed and say this is happening. But again, we are proof that this is also still happening, right? That independents are still happening. Like, we're alive and well and flourishing. We just brought in X amount of business. We just met with clients. Like, it's both things can happen at the same time without there being an eradication. You know, it's sort of like this. I put it to, like, climate change, where people were like, well, that's it. You know, we might as well throw in the No, there's still the ability to change the course of things. We still have a say. Like, until you're totally done, you still have a say. So I think if we just really focus on, like, what makes a great agent? Yes, it's important for agents to use these AI tools and stuff because there's an efficiency level there. But in the end, is that efficiency level going to trump that experience, that hand-holding, that questioning, that going through?
No,
no, it's not. It doesn't even do it with our financial planners.
I agree. And this is what I was talking about when I said the seeds, like the propaganda seeds that are planted. I feel like even as recently as like 8 years ago, you know, we are being taught to fear the power, like big data, right? Like big data is like a thing that we talk about in the portal war scenario. You know, people really want control of the content, which is their, like Zillow's content, which is our content, is what they have to sell. That is it. If we all collectively agreed to pull the plug on IDXing to Zillow, they would have nothing to sell. Nothing. Nothing.
Well, you're never going to get all people collectively agreeing to that, but you're never going to get all people collectively agreeing to do it either. We have to remember what the product is. Yeah.
But, you know, that idea of that data being so important is what has boosted Zillow and, for that matter, other big companies who aggregate consumer data, their value, this perception, like that's all that matters. And I think what I'm realizing now is that it might have just been some PR to increase their value for, you know, going public or shareholder revenue or, you know, it just even increasing their significance and power plays in the industry. And I am starting to feel like actually I want to hold my data a little bit closer. You know, I want to hold it like a baby and I want to keep it. All my agents, you know, keep their data. We don't send all of our stuff into one big gigantic portal. And I think I'm not a Luddite, you know,
but there's nothing wrong.
Some of the things about the way we used to do it still make sense.
I think it's a little bit of, look, anything all one way or other, there's that like that moderate middle in everything. Your vitamin intake, your political leanings, whatever it may, everything. Get there somewhere in the middle and you're healthiest. So I believe like analog is really kind of going to be making a comeback, right? Mm-hmm. Like that, when something goes so far one way, it becomes retro and more interesting again to come back the other way. So
100%.
There's a lot here to go play with in the old school. Like, I don't know. I think this is actually making it, it's kind of making it interesting again.
I know. I feel like, oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, now we know what we're going to be up against. We can at least make some predictions and maybe go tactile where they go tech, you know, or whatever. I've always been a fan of tactile, but I'm just saying, you know, it's like these moments are now more, even more significant than they were before. These moments of interaction are even more significant. So our job, I think, is to race to make the most out of those first interactions and get ahead of whatever it is that's going to try to get the eyes of our clients and make sure that we're advising our clients now, right now, on how, you know, kind of like how to do their searches and how what the significance of that actually is and who they're clicking on. And, you know, I said on stage, plant the seeds of your own irreplaceability right now. And I think that's something, that's the only way we can get ahead of this.
That's a good point. That's a great point. And I think that's it. Look, remember, so many people can be manipulated by fear, right? Like just that, oh my God, this could happen. Like fear is really, it's strong stuff, right? And it's not.
Yes.
But once they start planting like, oh, you're not going to be able to survive without coming here and getting our off-market exclusives, or you're not going to be able to survive without putting it on Zillow, or there is plenty of evidence that's around us at all times that neither are exactly true.
True.
Both
right.
are totally. Basically what you said, a propaganda of you could always still sell a house. It's just, how does it work for you, consumer? There is no absolute splash it all over Zillow or keep it entirely off the market, because when you're dealing with an individual, it's their needs. And just that's like the main message. Focus on you as an agent, your client's needs. Just, you won't go wrong with that. You won't, all this other stuff is a distraction.
Yeah.
It's just stupid.
I have one final question for you. It's kind of a trick question. So I want you to think carefully. Okay.
Is it multiple choice?
No. Okay. Not multiple choice. How do you feel about elimination of dual agency?
Okay, so dual, I need clarifications here. So dual agency as in?
One brokerage representing both buyer and seller.
Okay, not just one agent.
Not just one agent. I know that's also dual agency, but I'm talking about specifically one of the motivations of the off-market listing marketing scheme, I think, is so that Compass as a brokerage or any brokerage that operates that way can collect both sides of the transaction's commission, right?
I think there would be very severe unintended consequences that would make clear cooperation look like, you know, Play-Doh if you start saying, you know, no dual agency. I mean, dual agency.
But there are many states right now that don't allow a dual agency at all.
But is it dual agent as in the same agent, one, or is it dual agency not allowed in the same brokerage?
One brokerage, yeah.
So then think about that for a second. If you make somebody sign an exclusive BRBC agreement, right, with me, as I'm a buyer's agent in Red Oak, and I've now signed an exclusivity agreement, and now a Red Oak listing comes on, you can't write on it? You simply are like, that happens.
That would be, that's how it works when dual agency is not permitted, yeah.
So I guess I would say that's how it works. What is the end result of that? So then do they cancel that BRBC and say, go down the block to Coldwell Banker if you want this house?
My guess is that you would probably have some referral agents that you send in that situation. I don't really know how they do it because I work in California where we are.
It's just as prohibitive as telling somebody that they've only got to go to one brokerage to get access to the listing. Well, now you've got to leave that brokerage if you saw the listing and go to another brokerage to go buy it. I just stop putting up guardrails that are trying to not protect the consumer in any way. Because here, why should we intercept a relationship? If I've been working with you for 6 months, now I find the house of my dreams, I want to write on it. And now last minute, when we're supposed to do our real dance, we've been prepping and taking dance lessons all 6 months.
Yep.
I got to go get referred to Mary. I don't have a relationship with Mary. I have a relationship with Courtney. I don't
very,
want to do
very
that.
Good
so
point.
Stay
good
out
point.
Of my way on that one. No, I think that would be a horrible, very non. I think that's solving like one critical issue right up front, and the long tail of that is so god awful that you would create 85 problems to solve one.
See, that's how I feel about, you know, 50% of our brokerages pulling out of NAR. Same. Like, if I honestly think, just as a prediction, and then and I'm happy to hear your closing thoughts on this too. I actually think this is just going to be used as leverage, more like, okay, Zillow, now we've got the one up on you, and we will do this if you don't change your policy about excluding off markets. Then you're going to lose all this potential inventory, knowing that's all that Zillow has to sell. I think it's more of a leverage move than a pull out of NAR move, but I guess time will tell.
Again, that's going to be up to state associations. There's a lot of play in that. The good news is that it's not up to corporations as to whether or not dual agency should be allowed. That's not their
Of course not. I mean, listen, I agree with you. Consumer choice in every way makes sense, whether it's writing an offer with my agent on a listing that happens to be listed by the same brokerage. But there have been and there continue to be conversations, especially on LinkedIn, if you get into any of those. I'm going to go out and do a whole LinkedIn session maybe next time, because there's so much interesting conversation happening on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is something I never, ever used to even pay any attention to. But in fact, me too. Oh my God, it's like hot in there. It's like reality TV times 10. Like, it's crazy. There are like trolls. There are lawyers masquerading as consumer advocates. There are like people just really talking about all the different ways that they think our industry has things that are conflicts of interest in it, you know? So the same kind of people who manufacture the Sitzer Burnett kind of thinking are all up in that mix. And let me tell you, it is a very interesting, if not a little bit emotionally defeating place to play.
Yeah, I don't think, don't invite me in. It doesn't sound like a party.
Oh, man. Okay, well, listen, you'll have to watch the next one. We can talk about it the next time you come in.
Yeah.
Vanessa, I have one other question to ask you. Oh. One more very important question, because as I was talking about the rental syndication, Zillow Redfin, FTC thing, I'm like, who cares, actually? And you may have a different perspective on that. So I'd love to hear what you think about that.
Well, I think, so what I picked up from that is why we should care, right? First of all, it just looks like another fight, right? Like, it's like watching The Real Housewives and now another couple is fighting. Like, this is what it's about. But it's bigger than that. And it does need to be paid attention to, because what it shows is there was an avoidance of antitrust. There was a regulatory avoidance method used, a loophole there, to basically say it's okay to pay off your competitor, right?
Yeah.
And then we won't have to go through what would be like a normal merger acquisition and go through all the regulatory FTC, you know, bull. We'll just do this. But that has the exact same outcome as a monopoly. That takes away consumer choice, that increases prices, that diminishes competition. It does the exact same thing. So if the FTC pulls back on this and says, I'm not going to do my job, which, let's be clear, anything I said, moderation matters, something in the middle. You have pure unfettered capitalism, it goes haywire and crazy, right? You get 2008 all over again. You have pure regulatory government dominance, horrible. Something in the middle. Both have to exist at the same time. It's the yin yang of the economy, and it happens everywhere. If the FTC takes its foot off the gas on this one and they let this go, they basically just said, it's okay to basically take a loophole. It's just like NAR. You said you're not going to do anything. I'm not going to do anything about it. If they lose this, you're going to find a loophole and a workaround for monopolies because everyone's still in the same bed together. And so this has got to be squashed. It has got to be squashed. There's got to be something that says, you know, look, good on you, crafty little businessman. You figured out a way to find a loophole so that you could still get exactly what you wanted, which is limiting consumer choice and having it feel like I'm the only one that's got that. I'm the one holding the, you know, the ball here. And that's not okay.
Dude, I can't even find out who the good, I don't know who the good guys and the bad guys are in any of this. I used to be so clear on that. And honestly, now I'm just kind of like, wow, like it's like blowing my mind.
Right? No one's 100% angel. No one's 100% devil. Everyone's got, you know, their own villain in their story. But like this is not something to ignore. This is not who cares. It's actually, we should care very much because it's an alternative highway to the same experience. And if we don't block it now or we don't notice it now, that's going to be the super highway. Right? And so
very interesting. Thank you for clarifying that significance, because I, you know, personally, I don't do a lot in the rental market, so I'm not really aware of all the choices. Of
course,
I would imagine that the fees are something that somebody places an ad or places, you know, whatever, would, you know, you'd want that to be competitive, right? You want more than one choice.
Well, because again, remember, but it'll go to the broker, they'll charge the broker, and then the broker is going to say, I need to raise the rent, and then who's left holding the bag? The consumer. Right? Like, so it's every, all roads lead back to there being, anytime there is less choice, someone pays more, someone gets more screwed. And so choice is good. If it were up to me, I wouldn't want to say, oh, let me be the dominant independent here. I'd like to say, hey, I'd like to consult you on being my competition, because if you exist, I keep my game on. I'm sharp. I keep my people fierce, because you always need, you need something to aspire to. Like we kind of need something to compete against in a good way. If everyone's just like, no matter, I mean, it's the exact same thing, sorry, but it's like what we hate about the idea of communism. It stunts competition, innovation, growth, desire, the capacity of humans to create. Why would we allow that? The exact same result happens when you allow it a monopoly. Just because it's called a corporation and not a government, don't let it fool you. Anyway. I'll stop.
Famous last words. Thank you so much, Vanessa. Appreciate you so much. I can't wait for this episode to air. And again, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yes. Thank you again for having me.
Okay.
I'll be back whenever you want to fight about anything.
Okay. I love it. You're invited. All right. Bye. Now we're going to talk about the Zillow versus CoStar feud. Zillow cannot seem to keep its proverbial thingy in its pants when it comes to these lawsuits. I'm like, gosh, you're in such hot water, Zillow. Okay, Zillow asked to transfer a copyright lawsuit while CoStar doubled down, accusing Zillow of brazenly misusing listing images. So it's not just about the photos, it's about who controls the digital gateway to real estate. So this is another lawsuit that could absolutely affect the way listing photos are distributed, who owns the copyright. CoStar, for context, is notorious for these types of lawsuits. In the mid-2010s, it sued a company called Excelligent, I love pronouncing things, and it won. It was proven that Excelligent was copying CoStar's listings and putting those listings on their own website, okay? And then CoStar sued Crexy and also won. That's a commercial real estate search portal. So what they were doing is cropping out the watermark and then using CoStar's subscription-only images. Now they are turning to Zillow and accusing Zillow of using over 46,000 photos that belong to CoStar. There is something called DMCA Safe Harbor, and this was used, and again, I'm not a specialist in this, but it was essentially used to protect YouTube from an amassing of copyright infringement lawsuits. And it essentially says that if somebody notices that their material's being used without copyright, they have to give the content creator like a warning and be like, hey, you're using my stuff without permission. You can either pay me a licensing fee or take it down. And then there's this warning period. And then if that person is still in gross violation, then you can take action. But apparently, even though there is this safe harbor thing, it appears that CoStar is saying that Zillow still has so many images in the thousands that are still on Zillow's site, despite the warning from CoStar. So PropMoto wrote an article about this, and here's what they say. The stakes for Zillow are significant, but so are the ripple effects across PropTech. If CoStar prevails or even forces a major settlement, platforms might be forced to rethink their entire approach to listing images. Brokers, agents, and software providers might need to secure clearer licensing agreements before uploading content. And portals can be compelled to implement stricter monitoring systems. For companies that have long relied on free-flowing syndication of listings, that would represent a seismic shift. So again, just to kind of think about this, my understanding is that CoStar actually owns its own images, okay? Takes even its own images, which is why they are allowed to say you can't use this. In our regular real estate world, we hire photographers, we pay those photographers essentially for the license to use those images on our real estate marketing. Is there a limit to that? I mean, I have seen photographers in Los Angeles literally threaten to sue or sue agents who use their listings in other types of marketing material beyond the scope of marketing a singular listing. And in fact, by the way, a lot of agents actually discuss who those photographers are and then choose not to use them for that very reason. Because historically in the past, when we hire a photographer, we're essentially buying the license to use them throughout all of our marketing, including our buyer guides, seller guides, online portals, our website, you know, all of it. And so if this becomes like a thing where now maybe even, you know, Zillow and companies like that do pay a licensing fee to the MLS, but we don't see that. It doesn't reimburse us for the cost of actually buying the photographer's product. And I'm just wondering if there's going to be a trickle-down effect where essentially the licensing fees that a photographer might receive, I wonder if there's a way that it would bypass MLS IDX feed and become something that gets paid to the actual content creator himself or herself. I don't know. Just a thought, because this is about photos and about the removal of watermarks and reuse without permission. So interesting one to watch. Let's keep an eye on that. Now the MLS PIN settlement in the NoSalek case received final approval this week. This one is happening and it's already passe. The resolution sets a precedent for how MLSs handle commission structures in the wake of lawsuits, as in you can't post the pre-negotiated buy-side commission in the MLS. So that's already been settled. Every MLS in America has already changed their ways with regards to this. So it's kind of happening like a little late in the game. It's kind of like, well, that happened. Now, just a reminder, if your seller instructs you, hey, I want you to like advertise a higher than the average commission to incentivize a buyer and a buyer's agent, you're still allowed to do that. You just can't do it in the MLS. You can do it on social, you can do it on your website, you can do it in print material, et cetera. You can make phone calls, all that jam. It just can't be in the MLS. So we knew that one was coming. It's not a huge news article, but it did happen. So it kind of closes the loop. And finally, in major other news, which I am very, curious and concerned about, Rocket acquiring Mr. Cooper. Everybody's been talking about it, but the deal finally closed. So this is a $14.2 billion acquisition of the Mr. Cooper Group as the nation's largest mortgage lender and servicer. So could this reshape how loans are structured, bundled, originated? Perhaps. And, you know, my thought is that as Redfin and Zillow and other big companies try to create an ecosystem for which buyers and sellers never need to leave, like a particular platform, whether it's for searching, writing an offer, getting a loan, etc., and they discount commissions as an incentive to do that, they're actually preparing to make up that profit loss by originating loans. So if what I was concerned about happens, then there would be a reason why Zillow Flex agents or Redfin agents would be kind of pushing their clients, unsuspecting buyer clients, toward using the lender associated with that platform as opposed to one that maybe is more competitive. I don't know. So I'm concerned about the conflict of interest in all of this. What they're trying to do is like make a one-stop shop where they use all of the company's affiliated businesses all in one. So it feels like there is going to be a lack of choice, although they will always say, yeah, of course you have choice, but you will feel the pressure. You will feel the pressure from your agent potentially to use a particular lender, which I've never endorsed. And even as I have worked at many brokerages that had affiliated lenders, preferred lenders, or title and escrow companies, if those title and escrow companies are not like the best and not giving my clients the very best rate or the very best service, I would never recommend them, ever. And so I think for younger, newer agents, if this is how we're training people, again, going back to NAR, to code of ethics, to professional standards, we have to remember who we serve. Yes, especially in that moment where if people are just desperate to buy leads and have access, they might just do whatever the big boss says, even if it's not in the best interest of the client, under the guise that they will be rewarded like a puppy dog. Somebody's going to pat them on the head or give them an award or a better lead or whatever, even if it means compromising their integrity. That's what I'm concerned about. I don't think it serves the customer, but that's just me. So here's a Instagram reel that SoCal Min did on this very thing. And if you'll note in the comments, there are a lot of people saying, no, that's not true. So definitely read the comments.
Sneaky, sneaky. Be careful of this Zillow mandate if you're buying a home. Zillow agents are forced to make buyers use Zillow Mortgage. So when you go on Zillow and there's a property you want to see and you push that button, Zillow refers you to a Zillow Flex or Zillow Preferred agent. They don't work for Zillow, but for Zillow to keep sending them more buyers, Zillow takes 40% and Zillow wants to send 10% of the buyers to Zillow Mortgage. What does it mean for you? Imagine if you're part of that 10% that real estate agent has to send to Zillow Mortgage. It's like sending a sheep to get slaughtered. Higher rates, higher fees. You might not know that, but the agent is pushing you so hard because if they don't get more business. Be careful out there. As Zillow takes more market share, they're gonna start increasing the amount of buyers they want from their agents. So if you are using them, be careful. But for those of you guys who are buying a home today, here is the nationwide average mortgage interest rates. Remember, these rates are just a ballpark. Give your lender a call so you can get an accurate quote.
And in a bit of comic relief, there's this guy on LinkedIn. I've been doing like a deep dive into LinkedIn lately, but Mike Delpreet, he's very funny. But he actually created this website called Zitigation.com, Zitigation, where it's like a widget where you can go in and type in some information. It will draft a lawsuit against Zillow for you. That's the level that we're at right now, y'all. So if his tagline says, feeling restless, left out, bored, well, sue somebody. That's how it feels. That's how it feels right now in our industry. It seems like, I mean, obviously all eyes are on Zillow and all of these lawsuits. They must have a very busy team of attorneys addressing all of these things. I don't know what the end goal is. If anybody works for Zillow as an insider and has some insight into on like a high level what they're really trying to do here, I'd be very curious to know. But of course, our industry is always going to respond. Like, we will create ways to survive. We will do the damn thing, you know. I think that what we're really seeing is a lot of, you know, double disruption. You know, we're getting it from both sides. So I'll keep an eye on that. And just because I am such a huge fan of AI and I love signing up for things and accidentally forgetting that I did and then getting the surprising charge on my credit card and then feeling like, oh my God, there are too many little subscription charges, I did sign up for House Canary. And I signed up for House Canary because it has a few cool elements that I think they're constantly tweaking. Now, how I use it is for predicting future market value. So here's something that I love. So a lot of CMA tools, when it comes to any of the ones that are being marketed, that are AI CMA tools, like Sidekick and a few other ones, they're really variable in their estimation of value. A lot of the ABMs are like totally off, like can be off by millions, you know? And that's a lot. So you don't want something like that. But with House Canary, it automatically generates a lender approved, supposedly, like this is a report that an appraiser would accept, you know, and that a lender would accept, that's what they say. So it generates an automatic assessment of value based on the current condition, but then it also allows you to change the filter type so that you can run the same comps in the same area, but for totally renovated version of that same house with all of its different attributes. So even, you know, say you were working with a flipper and he wanted to know what the future market value is of a property and he wanted to add a pool, you would be able to do the current value, like what that ABM says the current value is, and then you'd be able to change the filter so that you can make it remodeled, add a pool, and see what the houses that are remodeled, add a pool, it's the same square footage, et cetera, within your radius are, and give a very solid data-backed analysis of what the future market value could be. For me, this is like such an amazing tool. I haven't found another one that does data so well. There are other aspects of it too. It does have like a farming aspect. It also has an AI where you can ask it like, hey, what do you think the value of XYZ house is if I added a pool? And it'll do some kind of cursory analysis for you too. So you can type it kind of like ChatGPT, that kind of interaction. But I have not exploited that as much as I have exploited their property value reports. So House Canary AI, I'm sure you can get a little free trial. Certainly worth it. I'm loving it, loving it, loving it. It is invaluable to me. These lawsuits are challenging how business is done in American real estate, whether it's Compass Anywhere or Rocket and Mr. Cooper, there's no question that our landscape is changing and changing so fast. But as Vanessa reminds us, boutiques do have an opportunity in this moment. We all have an opportunity in this moment to reconnect with our clients, to take it off the platform and put it into real life relationships, which whether it's business or in friendships, I think is something that all of us kind of need a little bit more of in our lives. And at the end of the day, you know, I think we could see them kind of eat each other. We'll see. I mean, I think no matter what, there's going to be changes, but it certainly won't be the end of us. We'll do what we always do. We will change. We will innovate. We will grow and we will disrupt. I'm Courtney Pulis. Thank you again for joining me on this episode of The Clean Close. Please like, comment, subscribe, share with a friend. Put something in the comments. Let me know that you're out there. If there's anything you'd like me to cover, any tools that you love working in real estate that are helping you serve your clients better, I'd love to know about them. We're going to do new episodes every single Friday. So please stay tuned. And I just like you being here. You make me feel good. Okay. Till next time. Bye.